By the way, Kendra is also with ARS at UC Davis.
Well, thanks everyone for coming today, and thanks for giving me the opportunity to speak on our research. This was the last year of a five-year SCRI research grant, and prior to this, we had a planning grant. And I've listed all of my co-PIs here. I thought I had a lot, but man, 21 is seems like a monumental task to keep all those people in line. I wouldn't want to do that. I'm going to talk about some of our grapevine projects today, and I work on grapevine diseases for USDA, ARS, and Davis. But I want to first mention that other people on our team studied similar diseases on almond, which is an important crop in California. The trunk disease of almond is called band canker. We had other colleagues in the group studying a similar disease called panicle blight of pistachio. And because we worked on similar pathogens, some of the same species or related species, this was a great opportunity for us to better study the biology of the organisms in these different hosts. So we had some parallel experiments that this funding allowed us to do. Previously, we had all been getting funding from different commodity groups. And, you know, you go to grape groups and say, well, we want to do some work on pistachios. And they just kind of look at you funny. SCRI was a unique opportunity to do these types of experiments. In grapevines, we have four different diseases. There are the dieback type diseases, Botrytis spherea, Eutypa and Phomopsis diebax, and also ESCA. In California, every vineyard eventually becomes infected by one or more of these diseases. They're the main depreciable driver of vineyard longevity in all major grape-growing regions of the world. And in California, we find that trunk diseases are one of the top three reasons why growers end up having to replant vineyards on a premature basis. So when growers plant a vineyard, it can cost anywhere from $5,000 to $15,000 to $30,000 an acre. There are very high startup costs. So you want to maximize how long your vineyard's productive. And if you're having to replant after only 15, 18, or 20 years, you're really cutting into your investments. Grapevine trunk diseases are characterized as a disease complex. So we have different diseases, we have different fungi causing these diseases, and researchers for a number of years worked on identifying the exact species causing the diseases, but we were limited in our research tools in that when we did inoculation experiments, for example, we had to focus really on just individual pathogens, or maybe we'd do inoculations with two of them at a time, but it didn't really encompass the cumulative effects of these different pathogens together on the host. What we find that these fungi cause are these wood cankers. They're internal. You can't see them from the outside of the bark. And if you go and take a piece of wood from the healthy-looking side of this tissue, which is kind of in the upper, on your upper left, and plate that out on a Petri plate, you can find two or three different pathogens that cause those diseases I told you about. And you can also find, you know, anywhere up to a dozen other fungi that colonize the wood. Some of these are secondary invaders, others are saprobes, others are doing we don't really know what. But they all infect different cells and different tissues of the host. Studying them all together hasn't really been possible until recently. So with our SCRI funding, we're able to sequence genomes of many of the different fungi, the pathogens, some of the saprobes, some of the things that we would call endophytes for lack of really knowing what they do. And we can, we're able to annotate their proteomes with a focus on gene families that we thought might have something to do with wood colonization. And I've listed a few of the groups of gene families on the bottom there. Cell wall degradation. We think that might have something to do with wood colonization. Cellular transporters and secondary metabolism, whether it's from the perspective of the pathogen side, you know, actually making toxins that kill the host tissue they're colonizing, or degrading toxins that the host is making to try to stop them. And with these genomic resources, we are able to use metagenomic approaches and metatranscriptomic approaches. And each of these columns represents a wood sample, you know, a piece of wood that we took from one of those cankers I just showed you, extracted total DNA or total RNA, and we're able to map Illumina reads to individual genomes or transcriptomes to see exactly which fungi are in there and get at questions about gene expression in planta of totally unrelated fungi inside the wood. And these are important unifying experiments that are now possible in the course of these 5 years of this project. And so that was some of the basic research that we were able to do with this funding that was an important research tool for us as scientists. But now I want to talk about an important tool that we developed for extension or for outreach. So something I listed the different diseases before, and I want to mention that these different fungi all cause internal cankers. They infect the wood. That's why they're called trunk diseases. They infect the trunk, the cordons, the spurs, or the canes, the permanent woody structure of the vine. And it can take months to years for any outward symptom to develop as these internal symptoms are developing. One of the outward symptoms is called a dead spur. The spurs are the bits of the permanent woody structure of the vine from which the new shoots originate. So every dead spur a vine loses, it's losing two shoots. With each lost shoot, it loses two clusters of fruit. So you can see how these diseases can really impact yields over time. This graph shows the progression of trunk diseases with vineyard age. These are more mature, these are problems you see in more mature vineyards. So for example, in a susceptible cultivar like Columbar, which is a wine grape cultivar, after year 10, you might see 20% of the vines showing some symptoms of one or more of the trunk diseases in the vineyard. But by year 15, it could increase dramatically, up to 75%. Now, the vines aren't more susceptible during this time period. The infections are actually happening before year 10. It's just taking many years for those dead spurs and the more obvious symptoms to develop. Because we know the infections are happening early on in the vineyard's life cycle, we recommend that growers start preventing trunk diseases early. Because once they're infected, all you can do is really hack out those infected parts of the vine and retrain new bits of it. And that's incredibly labor intensive, and those new bits can get infected too. And those are the post-infection practices, we'd say, which are very costly. The vines get infected during our rainy season. So these pathogens make spores, and the spores spread with rain. We're pruning our vines during the rainy season, and after we're pruning them, when it rains, this is when they can get infected. As such, researchers have tested different approaches for protecting those pruning wounds. One is to prune later in the dormant season when you have less rain and when those wounds heal more rapidly. That's a technique we call delayed pruning. The other alternative is to spray a protectant on after you prune the vines and before rain. Most growers don't use those practices, though, and so we want to figure out why and how to convince them to use these practices. Now, before SCRI came along, the way we would have approached this project is we'd have a couple plant scientists who are plant pathologists. We might have a grower or two and a farm advisor to help connect the two. But with SCRI, we were forced to include social scientists. And that was an important addition to our research group because we had a political scientist and we had an economist, and the political scientist really helped us get at questions about growers' perceptions of the practices, and that's how we figured out how to get the message out to them. We also expanded our set of, instead of just talking with growers about why or why not using different disease control practices, we talked with pest control advisors and diagnostic labs because, after all, they're important parts of growers' decision-making process on disease management. In addition to working with farm advisors, we worked very closely with grower groups, national grower groups, regional grower groups. The grower groups have their own social networks of outreach that some of the farm advisors don't. And the grower groups were also very influential in helping us meet our matching funds requirements when we wrote the grants. So some of them helped us figure out how to get land matches. Others got groups to give us cash matches. So without having those grower groups involved in the planning process for coming up with our list of objectives, we would have never made our matches. So I'm going to quickly talk with you about a study we did on table grape growers. These are the fresh grapes we buy at the grocery store. I've listed some facts here. Most of these are grown in the part of California called the Southern San Joaquin Valley, which is farther south and inland from where much of the wine grape production happens. This is where we conducted our surveys of table grape growers to find out which of these practices they're using or not. And this project was partly driven by our social scientist, Mark LaBelle, who's a political scientist by training. We used the Turning Point audience response system. So we had grower meetings. All the growers got these remote control clickers. I would show the questions on the screen as a PowerPoint presentation, and then they'd key in their answers. And a little receiver on my laptop would gather the data, so to speak. And just to give you an idea about these different practices, you know, delayed pruning costs no more than pruning in December. There's zero cost difference. Putting on an application of a pruning wound protectant costs about $65 a year to the growers. So we asked a series of questions about each of the practices, and so the first question we asked the growers is, how often do you use delayed pruning? And we asked them the same question about the pruning wound protectants. And they could say anywhere from never to always. And this figure shows our results. 28% of the growers said they use protectants or delayed pruning either often or always. But the vast majority of the growers we surveyed said never, rarely, or sometimes do they use these practices. So that was important to us as researchers because, you know, we had published these papers on these techniques. They showed they worked. We thought the projects are done. The growers can just start using this. And they weren't. The next question we asked the growers is, what's the age of the vineyard when you start using delayed pruning or protectants? And they could say within the first 3 years, between years 4 and 7, 8 and 12, or 13 years and up. And this is kind of a trick question to the growers, right? Because we as researchers know when the diseases are infecting the plants. And so if you want to use one of these practices to prevent disease, you want to start before year 10, basically. And the answers were disturbing for us. The growers, the majority of growers who are using one of these practices are starting when the vineyard is 8 to 12 years or 13 years and up. It's 55% for the growers using the protectants and 65% for the growers who are delaying pruning. So the people who are actually doing this are doing it too late when the symptoms are showing up, but the diseases are already established. And these are preventative practices. So it seems futile to us as plant pathologists that they would do this, but that's what they're doing nonetheless. We asked them a question about their perception of the practices in terms of its cost efficacy. So do you think the practice is cost effective? And they could say anywhere from very ineffective to very effective to I don't know. And this figure shows their answers to two questions. Do you think the practice is cost-effective? And when do you start using it in terms of the age of the vineyard? And these are kind of complicated graphs. I apologize. And ironically, our social scientist made this graph. You know, like they're supposed to be able to communicate with people better than us. But But yeah, if we had 20 minutes, I could go through just this slide, it would make sense. So I'll just do it really quick, and hopefully you'll get it. So if you look on the left side of the of the figure, this groups the answers from growers who felt that the practices were very cost ineffective. And it shows that if you look at the ones who also adopted the practice when the vineyard was 8 to 12 years old or 13 years and up, that adds up to 80%. So 80% of the growers who said, I think the practice is a ripoff, they also used it when the vineyard was too old. And on the other side of the graph, the growers who thought it was a very cost-effective practice, 50% of them are adopting the practice when the vineyard is young, the right timing. So there's this relationship between, you know, their perception of whether or not the practice is doing what it costs them to do, and when they're actually adopting it, correctly or incorrectly. And this was important for us as plant pathologists to communicate the cost efficacy of these practices in the long term in our extension tools that we're developing. Our economist, Jonathan Kaplan, who's at Sacramento State University, he worked with us to do some economic simulations to show that these practices were indeed cost effective in the long run. And this figure shows the net returns. The returns are the revenues you get from your fruit sales minus your total management costs. And they show what you would make for an acre of table grapes over a 25-year period. So we have the hypothetically healthy vineyard at the top line, the hypothetically infected, untreated vineyard at the bottom, and then what would happen if you adopted putting on pruning wound protectants, just one application per year in years 3, 5, or 10. And we can change the model based on how effective the practice is. So we assume a very modest level of disease control efficacy, only 50%. And what that amounts to is that 50% of the pruning wounds are actually protected. So you can see if you start using the practice in year 10, and that's the gray line, second from the bottom, you're making minus $15,000 per acre at the end of 25 years. So this is a bad decision. It is not cost effective to adopt this practice in year 10 and then use it from then on. But what's better is if you start using this practice in year 3 or year 5. Then after 25 years, you'll end up making, you know, $50,000 or $43,000 per acre. That's where you want to be. So we tried to make different figures like this and graphs. Our economists also, instead of putting up graphs, we as scientists love to look at graphs. It's not true for most of the world. And so he converted some of these numbers into figures such as how many profitable years you can expect to get out of your vineyard, things that growers might relate to a little bit better. We developed an economic tool online by partnering with the California Sustainable Wine Growing Alliance. They got a grant from the Specialty Crops block grant program from the California Department of Food and Ag just to develop extension tools around things like water use, best management practices for different diseases. And they got funding to do the web design, which we didn't do. And we didn't have people on our team to do with that expertise either. And so this tool was developed by them using some of the data that we generated from our economic simulations. And growers can go to this website. They can put in their site-specific details, like how much they're selling their fruit for per ton. How much does it cost for them to do a fungicide application? And then they can compare and contrast the different practices and see exactly what happens if they wait until year 10 versus starting in year 3. Because we partnered with the Viticulture Farm Advisors early on during the planning process of our experiment, they were really excited about coming up with new management guidelines. And there weren't any really good guidelines before. And so instead of talking with them at the very end of the experiment and saying, hey, why don't you help us develop these guidelines, we started talking with them early on, and then they weren't so sour when we came to them, you know, 4 years later. So I forget who it was that mentioned, who spoke before me, but getting people on board when you're planning is a much better idea than talking with them at the end. And it's hard to organize all the meetings, especially with social scientists, for example, who have a totally different background than us. It takes a lot of patience, a lot of conference calls, a lot of meetings, because you don't even have a common language to share. You know, if you think about us when we were all college kids, maybe we all took an English class with a social scientist. But other than that, you know, we haven't had general chem or general biology or anything in common. So it takes a lot to figure out how to design an experiment together. So lots of meetings, and that's where the planning grants are a great idea from SCRI, to try to make that funding available to actually meet in person. We have a project website if you want to check it out and get more information. And then just I want to thank again our funding agency. And thanks all of you for coming.
Great, thank you.
Questions?
Right. The question is, are there other factors that keep growers from adopting delayed pruning, like labor shortages? And yeah, that's a big issue. In certain parts of the U.S., and we've done similar studies not just in California table grapes, but also wine grapes in California, and wine grapes in Washington State. And in Washington State, for example, you know, if they want to gather up a pruning crew in March, well, those people are already working on the apples. So labor, yeah, there's labor around, but is it able to come into your fields? Maybe not. And that type of information is hard to capture in an economic way, you know, to put a dollar amount on. But that is something that we need to consider. Also, you know, pruning is not decided only based on disease management. I mean, there's all kinds of other factors growers think about when they decide when or when not to prune. And we as plant pathologists are so focused on diseases. We think, well, why aren't you just thinking about that? But that's really the last thing they're thinking about.
Other questions? Okay, thank you, Kendra.
Thanks.